From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in 2016 when a local organization relocated and expanded its kitchen. For Foodlink, this might sound like no big deal. Foodlink has been trying to help our community grapple with hunger for decades now, but this time was a little different. This was an expansion of the mission. Foodlink was preparing to create a new partnership with Wegmans to create a chef training program, and the people who would be trained would be considered hard to employ or underemployed. They would go out on a path, hopefully, to a living wage job with an average salary of maybe $45,000 per year. That would be more than double the median wage for entry-level food industry jobs. Now, could it work? Well, just about a year ago, the inaugural group of 12 began their training as part of the Foodlink Career Fellowship Program. They are finishing up, getting ready for work, and if the program is effective, they're going to get those so-called middle skills jobs that are open in our community. Foodlink is already moving forward with plans for future groups of career fellows, and this hour we discuss whether this approach is effective at helping people who are underemployed find work that pays well. We'll also talk about the scale. Just a dozen fellows to start. How much can this program grow? A lot to talk about this hour. Mitch Gruber is the Chief Strategy Officer for Foodlink. Nice to have you back here. Thanks for being here.
Always a pleasure. Thanks.
Also with us is Lindsay Benage from Wegmans. Lindsay is Training and Development Coordinator for Rochester and the Southern Tier. Nice to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And Gloria Soldavila Ramos is a member of the inaugural cohort for the Foodlink Career Fellowship and now a line cook for Wegmans.
Yep.
Nice to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
So, Mitch, you know, we're going back a year now. July 9th, I think, is when you really kicked off with this. So what's the state of where it is for the initial dozen? And then we'll kind of talk about how all of this works.
Yeah, so it's been a very exciting year. We learned a lot in the process. Things that we never thought would be possible came true, and things that we assumed would be obvious and simple didn't happen. So, when push comes to shove, if you want a kind of bird's eye view of the whole story, we were hopeful to start with a cohort of a little more than 10. I think when we were on the show, we talked about a dozen. We really ended up with 10 individuals who graduated from the kind of soft skills portion in term one and made it to the next part of the fellowship. And from there, we have 8 graduates. So an 80% graduation rate in the grand scheme of training programs across the country is really high. There's an organization called Catalyst Kitchen, who's a kind of conglomerate of these types of programs, and they say that the national graduation rate hovers around 50%, so we certainly exceeded that. And of the 8 graduates, all of them have a really great chance to get into the very types of jobs we tried to create, which you said $45,000, which I do think is part of the long-term goal, but really the beginning was trying to get people into livable wage, not minimum wage jobs.
And we'll talk about the difference on how we kind of look at that framework, and then eventually, again, right, that long-term, what that looks like in terms of the money. But let's kind of go back to 2016 when you guys relocated. Why did you decide to kind of go on this path anyway? Because what Foodlink does is hard enough. I mean, you're dealing with hunger in our community.
Yeah. Well, you know, it has to come full circle to Wegmans. So Wegmans helped us, they helped us fund the expansion of the kitchen. They helped us design it. And as we kind of got into a little bit more of a partnership with Wegmans than we'd ever really had before. I mean, they've always given us food and support in various ways, but this was really working on a project together for a long time. They made it clear, John Emerson, who was on the show with mm-hmm. us last year, made it clear that Wegmans actually at one point had even thought about starting their own training kitchen because they had this major kind of shortage of talent for the cook-to positions, which I'm sure Lindsay will talk about. But my kind of brief analysis of it is that it's not necessarily for folks who are coming out of culinary school and have lots of loans and are hoping for $60,000, $70,000 a year for a position, but it's also not someone who can just come out of working on a line somewhere else. It's a kind of specific training, and you need to have some rote skills. So Wegmans was thinking about creating their own and instead said, look, you guys already make 5,000 meals a day. You guys are already serving the very community that we want to create jobs out of. Why don't you figure out how to start the training program? And that's really when it started, and that's where we are now.
I think, Lindsay, if you hear that, you know, a company like Wegmans has, you mentioned Line 2
Cook 2.
Cook 2 open, that you can put out, you know, a notice and be flooded immediately. But I guess part of the issue is qualification? Is that right?
Absolutely. It's a whole mix of things, right? It's, you know, what is the foundation or skill set that that person has, their passion or goals? You know, are they a values match for us? Are they really understanding of the culinary opportunities within a grocery store? You know, we try to be as competitive as possible and really shout that from the rooftop what these great opportunities that we have are. But, you know, unemployment's low. Everybody is shouting from the rooftops that they need cooks still. I think that was a situation a year ago when you were first on the show. And it's still that way. We still have so many opportunities. So as much as we might get a slew of applications or interviews, you know, how does it pan out? How do they really qualify? And really, are they that match where they'll be successful and happy?
What does CookTube do? What's a day look like for someone in that position?
Yeah, so a CookTube, we call them line cooks now. It's sort of a middle-of-the-road position. We have our prep cooks, our line cooks, and our lead cooks. So a line cook really has the responsibility to coordinate efforts. You know, it's beyond just going in the kitchen and producing and learning that foundation. They came to the externship really having so much knowledge already. You know, they have the Ruby course certifications, OSHA, ServSafe. They had a pretty solid foundation. The externship really provides the skill set of production. What's it like to be following job aids, production in the kitchen, customer interaction? And then that line cook, you know, once they step into that position, it's all of that still, but it's a little more coordinating the efforts with our prep cooks and sort of looking at the day, the tasks for the day, and ensuring that everything gets done and really coordinating. So it's almost that step up. And once they master that, they're great candidates for the lead cook position, which is more leadership.
And we'll talk to Gloria in a moment about her story, how she got involved, and what the future might look like. But Mitch, why don't you tell me a little bit about what you're doing right now to prepare for future, I guess you'd call them cohorts, that's the term, future groups of fellows, and, you know, what you want the community to know about that.
Yeah, so first, let me just go back first to the question that you asked and Lindsay answered. I think this is not just about a specific program, right? To me, one of the things that's so exciting about what we've accomplished in the last year is that this is the way that workforce development should be looking future forward in all the different industries. Rather than starting with, okay, we know we can create this skill, we actually started backwards and said to one of the biggest employers in the city, right, one of the biggest employers in the region, what are your major needs when it comes to employment and training? And then actually built out a curriculum from there. And what's particularly special and unique about the food industry is that it has very low barriers to entry. And I think when you hear Gloria's story, you'll see that, you know, I have zero doubt in my mind that Gloria is going to be as successful as she wants to be. And that's in part because of her, but it's also in part because of the food industry kind of gives those opportunities. So we created a program that really accentuates that and allows it to work. It's not necessarily the same thing with things that maybe are a little bit higher tech, where you have to have a certain level of skill and education. Food industry is open, and it's an opportunity to really build those jobs. So we've done it successfully with our first cohort, and now what we're trying to do is figure out how to scale it up. So right now our goal is to have two cohorts per year of about 15 people, and we want the next one to start actually in July. We're recruiting for it now, so I'll probably say this three times over the course of the hour, but if anyone's interested in being a part of this program, we accept nominations. So this is not open application for anyone who wants to apply. We're looking for a social service provider. We're looking for a community partner to nominate an individual who they think would be right for this program. They can find all the information at foodlinkny.org, or they can contact me directly at mgruber@foodlinkny.org, and we will get that process going. But the big thing for us, Evan, in terms of the future is New York State just about a month ago announced $175 million going towards workforce development initiatives. And so we are in the process of we have an application in, the state's very interested. And one of the big developments since the last time we spoke about this was we are actually the only certified apprenticeship for culinary in New York State. So we think we have a great chance for the state to actually fund the expansion of the program.
So when you say you want nominations for this, people who are going to be nominated are people who need the work, who maybe have the opportunity to spend these 12 months or whatever, is it roughly 12 months?
Yeah, 12 months.
12 months doing it. Anything we should know about the kinds of people you want nominated?
We want folks who have had barriers to employment. something that has stopped them from being able to get into the workplace easily. You know, when it comes to our first cohort, we're talking about folks who have maybe had a history of incarceration, substance abuse, lack of formal educational attainment. You know, Gloria will certainly tell you her story, where Gloria actually came over during Hurricane Maria from Puerto Rico. So that's obviously, you know, part of what kind of makes a barrier to employment. That we're looking for those folks, but also it can't just be that they have a barrier to employment. They have to have a real drive and interest in the food industry. And the first 3 months of this program are unpaid. You get plenty of kind of perks in terms of chef code and knives and different trainings, but it's unpaid. So you have to be willing to make that commitment. After that, from month 4 all the way through month 12, you are a paid employee of either Foodlink or the extern like Wegmans. But so people have to really want to dive into this and be engaged and committed.
All right. Well, Gloria Soldevilla Ramos is a member of the inaugural cohort of the Foodlink Career Fellowship, now a line cook for Wegmans. Why don't you let's talk about your story? And Mitch gave us a little bit, but where was home originally? Where are you from originally?
Hi, I'm from Puerto Rico. Grow over there, and I came like a year and a half because of the hurricane. Mm-hmm. So I came here to be with my mom because I lost a lot of stuff over there, and the jobs, it's really hard to find a job over there now. So after that, 6 months later that I've been here, my mom passed away, and I was, what am I going to do now? Because I didn't have a house, I don't have jobs, I don't have nothing. But for that time, I was studying at Oasis. And I think I did a great job because the chef from over there nominated me to be at Foodlink. And like Mitch says, that we don't gonna get paid 3 months later, you know. It's going to be really tough anyway. But if you really want to grow, if you really want to have a future, you have to stay. You have to continue in studying. Then you're going to find a work. So I give my best. It, you know, my English is not that good. I learn a lot over there because everybody, it don't matter if where you're from, they're going to treat you like the same to anyone. They show you if you don't understand, they dedicate the time to you, the time. It's amazing opportunity.
Gloria, es fácil entenderte. Hablas bien.
Gracias.
Yeah, it's no problem at all. And before we kind of talk about what's going on now in your life, can we go back just a little bit? Can I ask you a couple questions?
Yes.
So you grew up in Puerto Rico, and when the hurricane hit, I think we're going back, two Septembers now? 2017, yeah. September 2017? Amazing, we're coming up on 2 years. Can I ask you, you know, when you talk about losing a lot, what did that mean? What happened during or after the hurricane to, how did it disrupt you in your life?
Yeah. So for that time, I have a 3 years baby soul now. So for that time, you only have a few months or maybe a year. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of stuff because before the Hurricane Maria, we have another one. And that hit, and then the other one hit too. So I lost my job. I lost the daycare. I lost everything. The father of my baby lost everything. So I don't have job. I don't have money to pay nothing. So I talked to my mom, and she told me that we're going to get really good here. So I came. But
you came to Rochester?
To Rochester.
What did you know about Rochester?
Well, my mom just lived here all his the life. So
your mom lived in Rochester her whole life?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I just came a few times to be with her a few weeks or something, and I only know that I never been working here. I no talking to nobody. So
was it was it frightening to pick up your life and move it, or did you simply think that's what you had to do?
No.
What was it like?
It was crazy because I have to begin everything, my life again. Losing everything, find new stuff, new home, everything. And it's hard because if you are alone, it's okay. But I have a baby. I have to look for her. So it's really tough.
And you mentioned it's a daughter?
It's a daughter.
You and your daughter came. Did you live with your mother when you came?
Yeah. We came, the father of my baby, me and my daughter, to live with my mother. But she passed away, so
I'm sorry.
I was living with her. And we only have a month to leave the house. And I was, what? Where I'm going.
Okay, so you're living with your mother. She passes away. And again, I'm so sorry about that.
It's okay, thank
you. And you were told, you know, you got a month or two to leave. You have to go somewhere.
Yep.
Did you, what was the thought process at that time? Did you have money for rent anywhere? Did you know where to go to get help?
Well, like I say, for that time I was studying at Oasis. The people from over there is really nice, like Food Link. They care. They give you some help. They know your study. It don't matter if you want to grow professionally, but you also grow personally. You know, they want to help you to find job. They want to help you to grow, but they also care about you. So I found this chef, and he talked to me about the director from Oasis, and she helped me a lot. She find me the new house that I have. Thank for Food Link, because for that time I was nominated to be at Food Link. So I began to be over there. And I don't know, all the helps come together.
And just for the listeners out there, Oasis is the adult education. Oasis is the adult education portion of the Rochester City School District, and so they have lots and lots of different curricula, different types of programs. Culinary is one of them, and they also do a remarkable job, I think, particularly of serving the refugee and immigrant community, and obviously also folks who have come from Puerto Rico. So I think one of the lessons that we've learned in this last year with the program is that we want nominations from places like Oasis, because when we take on someone like Gloria, we cannot be the only social services and safety net. And the fact Oasis, one of the reasons I think Gloria has been as successful as she's been in the program, and you know, Lindsay will talk, I'm sure, about how Gloria's just been an absolute star of the externship, I think is in part because of her own personal skills and motivation and drive, but she also had a very, very, very full support system with the work that Oasis did. So that's kind of part of the reason why this is a nominating process versus just having people open apply. We needed that support from Oasis.
How's she doing? You want to tell us how she's doing?
Yeah, it's exciting to talk about because, you know, everyone has different challenges along the way throughout the externship, as we saw. And, you know, that's life. Life happens. And we talk about a certain resiliency that Gloria has had to overcome a lot of obstacles that some of us will never understand that, or we've never been through it. But that's very apparent in her work. You know, from the beginning, Gloria really stood out as being very engaged and excited. You know, she had to earn the opportunity. She had to go through the formal interview like everybody else would, like any employee of Wegmans would, and she really had to earn that. And from the beginning, you know, we saw that dedication and that passion there. And then as soon as she started, you could see it right away. So Gloria did her externship at Next Door Bar and Grill. So she was the one extern out of the group to have the experience within the restaurant. So it's a whole lot of new, right? You're new here, new job here, first time working in a restaurant. And, you know, she was able to really, you know, get in the grind, and she had to learn from the very beginning on things that are very second nature to folks already working in the restaurant. She really had to learn that and embrace it. And it became apparent. And I think it's really sparked her curiosity with food, and that sort of filtered over into your personal life and that passion for food and wanting to try new things at home. And you've spoken about that quite a bit, which has been really exciting. She's had opportunities to shadow within our stores. You know, she's going to be shadowing at Amore. So she's really able to see all these opportunities and and then allows us to understand where does your passion lie and, you know, where does she see herself growing? It sounds so easy to do, but when you're doing it day in, day out, and you have challenges, you know, personally or childcare for the day, it can become really difficult. And she's always remained very positive and excited, and I think it's been very infectious to anyone who's around her.
Well, Gloria, when you were growing up, what were your favorite foods? Who were your food? I'm going to ask you two questions. What were your favorite foods, and who was the real person who you looked up to make these meals?
So my favorite food is arroz con gandules.
Oh, I thought you were going to say arroz con habichuelas.
No, arroz con gandules.
Okay.
It's a meal from Puerto Rico. So my grandma, she always tried me to help me how to cook. So I've been interested.
Yeah, interested?
Yep. to cook. So when I was growing, a lot of obstacles. So I find a different restaurant to work over there. And it was so amazing because it's stuff that you don't make at your house. So you just... Well, me, if I want to try something, I just want to try more and more. So it make me get more interesting about that.
What do you love to make at home?
I love to make pasta, but also I make a lot of cookies with my baby.
Your three-year-old has a sweet tooth?
Yes.
Wow. And at last week, all the different fellows did a little presentation of their findings, and Gloria was, to me, it sounded like you were particularly proud of some of the salads that you've been making.
Oh, yes. I learned a lot in the next door restaurant because you can make your own touch. Where my station is the Garmo. Is salads and raw appetizers. So it made me be curious to give my own touch. And also you have your own salad with your own dressing that you have to give to the chef every single day. So I just get creative. And it made me, I want to know more and more.
Now, when you ended up at Next Door Bar and Grill, see, I don't know what part of Puerto Rico you're from. Are there restaurants like Next Door back where you grew up?
No, it's more, it's not like that fancy, but it's a good food. I don't know how to say in English, but campo, you know, is really far from the
country food.
Country.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm from Caguas. That is the heart of the island. So,
but not from San Juan.
It's really close.
Okay, it's close to San Juan, but a little bit more country.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so it makes sense. So what were your first impressions? What did you first think when you started at Next Door Bar and Grill?
That I cannot do it.
No, you can't do it.
Because nobody talks Spanish, it's really hard to me to know this. I know what is this type of food, but in English, I don't know what is it, you know? It's really hard to know the difference of this vegetable in English and this in Spanish. Mm-hmm. It's really hard. But I have a dictionary, so I learn. If I don't understand, I love to make questions. And if I don't understand, I'm going to make you the same question again. Because I'm growing. And if I pass that, like, okay, I don't understand, I don't care. No. I have to know what is it because I want to grow, you know? So that made me, that curiosity, like, it made me, I want to know more and more. I just want to grow.
And were your colleagues, were they helpful? Were they patient with you?
Yes. They understand that I'm not from here. They give, I know he's sometimes desperate.
Yeah.
Because maybe I'm annoying sometimes. Of all the questions, but
I'll tell you this much, and Lindsay can chime in. I came into the middle of this presentation. So Wegmans asked all the fellows to come in to, what was it? It was a Friday, right?
Yeah.
To do a presentation on their externships, and I was interested in watching the fellows, but I was particularly interested in watching the Wegmans staff, and because it was all the chefs at the different stores. Right. When Gloria went up and did her presentation, they were just they were just beaming with pride. So I'm positive that she didn't annoy any of them. And I'm positive that they were all just incredibly proud of how far she's come over the past. And the externship was only 12 weeks. I mean, the program is 12 months, but she learned so much and grew so much in the 12 weeks with them.
You want to add to that, Lindsay?
Yep, I'd have to agree. I think our chefs and really anybody at Wegmans, they get excited when people ask questions. Everybody sort of has that passion to teach and educate. And when you have someone who is just so genuinely curious and you can see that passion come through, I mean, that's the warm and fuzzy stuff that gets us excited in our roles. Because, again, and especially the restaurant, you know, things get crazy or, you know, it's easy to have a really busy night ahead of you. But when you get the time to really spend on that development and someone who wants to grow, it's exciting.
Well, and look, these are our fellow human beings. They're also our fellow Americans who were devastated by a hurricane. Mm-hmm. And I think, frankly, it's kind of horrifying how many people in this country forget that. But how many, I mean, I've heard 400 plus, I mean, I don't know if we know exactly in Rochester, Mitch, how many Puerto Rican families and Puerto Ricans have been relocated here.
But the number I heard after Maria was 500 new families in RCSD alone. So yeah. I don't even know if that incorporates some of the suburbs.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm sure that it doesn't quite touch the whole number, but it's a big number. And it's a big Puerto Rican community. But again, our fellow Americans here in need, so I'm sure they were not annoyed. I'm sure they were very excited to see you growing. But how long did it take you to change your mindset from I can't do this to I can do this?
I figured out that I was thinking that if nobody helped me, if I don't have like the type of help that I need, I cannot do it. But everything is different because everybody gave me that opportunity to grow. The help is over there. So I was thinking they are helping me. What am I not going to do myself? Because I have the help. I only have to move. Why not? So I just do it.
That's great. You mentioned that the restaurant is kind of fancy. It's kind of fancy.
It's really fancy.
What is your favorite meal on the menu there?
From a station, I love the avocado crab salad. But from the pasta, I love the bolognese pasta.
Bolognese?
Yep. Mm-hmm. It's delicious.
What do you think you learned the most in the last 12 months? What kind of skills are the most important for you?
I learned a lot how to use my knife properly, mm-hmm. how to eat really healthy because I have this tips at my house. I really eat so different at my house now. And I also how to do my time management. I doing the things really fast, and perfect, you know, really nice, delicious. So I grow in the professionally, I grow a lot, but also in the personal, I know how to see the things in another way. I know how to be patient, like a lot of stuff, and my whole life changed.
Now, how are your knife skills now?
Perfect.
Yeah. How were they a year ago?
Maybe you can see some cuts, but...
See, that's what I was wondering. I have a friend who recently bought a motorcycle. He's having a midlife crisis, just the truth. And he crashed his motorcycle after 80 miles. And he said, you know, that's the rite of passage when you buy a motorcycle. You're probably going to crash it. The goal is not to total it. And I thought, I wonder if that's the same for people who get into the chef world with knife skill. You know, yes. You're going to have some cuts. The goal is just not to lose a finger. You have them all.
Yeah, okay. I have it all.
And now here you are. You're moving into a job. What's the job that you will that you're currently working?
I'm a line cook. I'm doing at the restaurant. Last week I was doing some prep, in prep station, some walkery that is Asian food, but now I'm again at the next door, doing some salads. I don't know if I'm gonna do some pasta, but I'm growing to be a sous chef, so I have to learn a lot.
And the program, so actually our graduation is on Thursday. So the program is not quite done yet. Gloria is still, along with everyone else, in finishing their externship. But with a number of other members of the first cohort, Wegmans has actually made their formal offer. And again, when it comes to starting wages, they are in line with what we are hoping for, the more livable wage, closer to $15 an hour. Mm-hmm. And I think, as we all know in this community, because I think Forbes hits us over the head with it every year, Wegmans is one of the best companies to work for in America. And fortunately, when you get your foot in the door there and have people like Lindsay working with you, the ceiling is very high.
Well, congratulations to you.
Thank you.
How's your family situation? You have a 3-year-old?
Yeah.
I mean, how do you balance work and the time you have to be?
It's really hard because I also don't have a car. So it takes me 2 hours, well, maybe 3 hours to be at my work on time because of I don't have a car. And
how do you get to work?
In a bus.
Take the bus.
Yes.
And when you just one way from home to work takes you how long to get there?
I have to take 2 buses, but the time is changing every time. So, okay, I begin at 2:30. I have to leave my house at 12, so I can be at the work at 2:30.
Two and a half hours.
Yes.
So, we could do a whole conversation, Mitch Gruber,
yes.
who moonlights as a city councilman, on the subject of transportation and people, you know, moving out of poverty.
It's huge, and until that system gets fixed, we have a major problem on our hands. But you know, I think one of the keys to all this is that Gloria is living proof that despite what seem like just tons and tons of barriers, there are opportunities, and it's partially about what your work ethic is, and it's also partially about what kind of support systems you can build around you.
Where is your daughter when you're at work?
In the morning, during the day, she's at the daycare, and in the night, the father take care of her,
mm-hmm, her
until
father.
I get to my house.
Okay. And you return home what time?
It depends. If I'm at the restaurant, I can be at, if I don't have a ride, I can be at 2 in the morning. If I can end the work at 11, but waiting the bus and everything, I have to be at, I'm walking to my house. Maybe 1:30 or 2.
In the morning.
So if somebody give me a ride, I can be on time at my house.
How many hours a week once you start after this week or whenever you kind of get going here, how many hours a week are you going to work?
I go the whole week. I only have Sundays, and sometimes they give me Saturdays because they know the hours of the bus is more time to take it.
Yeah.
So I only work 5 days every week. Only
5. 40 hours?
It's 40 hours.
Yeah.
And I think the nice thing, too, is the externship wraps up. Her placement is still up in the air, right? So we have to get through the process.
Yep.
But at this point, it seems like Gloria is going to transition over to our stores, which may make it a little bit easier for, you know, the time that the shifts end until something a little bit easier on transportation. So she's got this definite invaluable experience, and now she'll be able to transition that into the stores a little bit, and it'll be a different experience. But again, that foundation will follow her wherever she goes.
And Lindsay, when you are working with and when you employ someone like Gloria who doesn't own a car, how important is it for a company, whether it's Wegmans or anybody, to try to work with that employee knowing the challenge? I mean, that's a remarkable challenge that she has just getting to work.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, we try to be extremely flexible. I think that's one of the things that Wegmans prides itself on is that flexible scheduling and the opportunity to really look at each individual and say, you know, where do they live? What's their form of transportation? And how can we offer opportunities that allow people to grow? So it's something that we definitely look at, especially with our full-time employees. You know, we are retail, so there's certain expectations about availability, but it's got to be realistic. It has to be family-friendly, and that's the moral of the story. With everything we really feel at Wegmans. So how can we make it so, you know, Gloria, a mom who wants to learn and grow, can really do it all?
Now, Gloria, in 5 years from now and in 10 years from now in the future, where do you want to be? Well, tell me what the dream job is.
I want to be a sous chef, but maybe at 5 years I can do that. But at 10 years, I think I can have my own place to make my restaurant. Who knows?
What kind of restaurant? Tell me what you're going to offer.
Criollo, Puerto Rican food. My own touch.
Are you feeling like Rochester is going to be your home for the future?
Yes, I'm not moving.
This is it?
Yep.
Are you comfortable raising your daughter here?
Yes.
Okay. And I know you must have friends, if not also some family still in Puerto Rico.
My whole family.
Okay. What did they think? How are they doing?
I don't talk a lot with them, but it's hard. They are moving to find stuff like jobs and everything because the jobs is not that much time. They give you maybe a part-time and 4 hours, maybe 3 days of the week. So it's really hard. They are so proud. They never think that I was making it because of my language, because of I'm alone here. So I feel good about that.
Wow. And last question before we go to break, because I just caught the glimpse of engineer Rob Braden, who's so patient with me, and I didn't realize it's already 12:41. I've been engrossed with Gloria's story. What do you think, Gloria, that many people in, say, the northeast of this country, people in this community who only read or hear about what happened in Puerto Rico with the hurricane, what do people maybe not understand about how challenging it is now? What has changed since the hurricane in Puerto Rico?
I think that it's not simple because you are in a new place. You have to seek for new stuff. You don't know the neighborhood. Like, you don't know the people. You don't trust nobody. So it's really hard. And it's almost hard if you don't have nobody. You don't know nobody. So I think I don't know how to say it, but everybody have to be patient, be kind, be really nice to each one because you don't know the things that happened to that person. You don't know what happened to him or to her. So they have to be really nice to the people.
Well, as we go to break, I'll just read one email from Andrew who just writes, Vamos, Gloria.
Thank you.
Si se puede, right?
I know.
That's just a listener who's really appreciating your story very excited not only that you're here,
but
that your life is on this track. And the reason we're hearing about Gloria Soldevila Ramos' story, who is from Puerto Rico, came to Rochester after the hurricane and ended up as one of the members of the 12 people, Mitch, right? 12, right?
10.
I'm sorry, 10, in the inaugural cohort of the FoodLink Career Fellowship. And that was about a year ago. 8 of the 10 are going to graduate. And as Mitch said, that is a higher than average graduation rate for programs like this across the country. We're learning about what that means for them in this community and the future for people like Gloria. Mitch Gruber is the Chief Strategy Officer for FoodLink, and Lindsay Benage is here from Wegmans, and we're talking about this partnership between FoodLink and Wegmans. When we come back, we're going to talk about if it is scalable and just how big you can go with it, what it really means in terms of when we talk about middle skills and how people like Gloria are filling these jobs, but also what's still open. So let's go ahead and get that only break, and we'll come right back with them on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, the Jewish Federation of Greater Rochester has released a survey to help gather feedback from the Jewish community about a wide range of issues, not the least of which includes the rise of anti-Semitism across the country. The questionnaire is called Every Voice Counts. We're going to talk about who is filling out the surveys and what it means, what we can learn from it. Next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We're talking about the FoodLink Career Fellowship Program and the efforts being made to move people who have been in positions that we might call underemployed into a career path. And I mean, in many ways, Mitch Gruber, we've been talking about the successes of people like Gloria and this partnership between FoodLink and Wegmans. But I suspect in your first year, there's still a lot to learn. There's going to be challenges that maybe you didn't suspect or things that you're going to want to sort of iron out. Give me a sense for what you've learned in that first year of this.
Yeah, I think I think you've already heard a lot of it just from the conversation with Gloria, right? We heard about some of the issues and challenges with transportation and childcare, which I think everyone around the table working on workforce development knows that transportation and childcare are huge issues. But there were a lot more, too, things that I never would have predicted. One, to be just perfectly frank, was we lost a member of the cohort to the criminal justice system for reasons that I would argue were very unjust to this gentleman. And, you know, having to figure out how to navigate parole when you're trying to deal with people who have been incarcerated and are trying to re-enter, you know, the workforce, you need the cooperation of the criminal justice system. And although I felt like we made some strides, in the end, there's a huge kind of barrier there. Substance abuse. The other gentleman we lost had come with us after a history of substance abuse, and we tried everything that we could to make sure that he stayed clean and sober for the entirety of the program. And unfortunately, we weren't able to do it. And obviously, those are going to be things that we don't want to stop taking people who have been incarcerated or have had substance abuse issues. If we can't work with that community, then we're not doing our job with this program. But it requires a lot more than just a good program. You have to have partners all along the way. And that's what it's taking some time to build it. But I do think that Rochester generally is thinking more about workforce development in a holistic way, and I see some progress happening.
So I want to ask you one follow-up to that, which is you have now been at – well, you've been at FoodLink for how many years? You're the chief strategy officer now.
A decade.
A decade at FoodLink.
Yeah.
And now you're on Rochester City Council because you see the policy implications of the kind of work of exactly the kind of stuff you're talking about. There is – still, and every time we talk about these kinds of programs, we talk about reentry, we talk about recidivism. Every time we do that, we hear listeners on very different viewpoints on this. There's still a debate in this country about what it means to have a prison system, and knowing that the vast, vast, vast majority of people who are incarcerated are, of course, eventually not going to be incarcerated, and what it means when you see the numbers of how many people end up incarcerated again. And the challenge that comes with the fact that even if you really are trying to find work, to maintain work, you probably don't have a car, you may not own a car, transportation, Gloria's talking about 2.5 hours one way to work when she's got a 3-year-old at home, all of these things stand in the way. And some of our listeners are going to hear that, Mitch, and they're going to say, good, don't get incarcerated. That should be a lesson to you. And others are going to say, boy, you know, we're doing nothing or very little to help prevent future incarceration, which, by the way, the taxpayers subsidize. So where do you kind of come down in that push-pull, and what are some of the lessons as you apply them to that you're learning in the last year with this?
Well, I'm going to fall into the latter category. I forget how you framed it. But obviously, you know, for us, the goal is how do we work with folks who are coming out of incarceration, whatever they did in the past. You know, I'm looking at this as a city council member now who really wants to see us not go after people, for no one to be jailed for marijuana. I mean, we know that in the next, hopefully, year, maybe 2 years, marijuana is going to be legal.
It is going to happen. If you just look at the polls and the trends, it will happen.
Correct. Yeah. So there are people incarcerated today for something that's going to be legal tomorrow. And so regardless of anything else, I want to make sure that we as a community, this is not a food thing, this is the general community, are finding ways to help people re-enter society in a way that they're going to be able to live happy, productive lives. The problem, though, Evan, I've learned this very clearly in the last 18 months as an elected official, is that there are so many different systems that don't often talk to each other. So the gentleman that we lost is really from we lost because of the parole system. And parole, there's very little that we can do locally. It's a state parole board, and there's very little local things that can be done to help change that right now with the system as it is. Meanwhile, we did meet with Sheriff Baxter from from Monroe County, and I think this is a very cool opportunity. Both of the two county jails in Henrietta and on Plymouth, both of them have kitchens, right? They have the mess hall. There's people who are working in those kitchens for sometimes months, sometimes years. If we could take the ones who are most most interested in that as a career path, and weave them right from being released from prison into our system, into our program, and then connect them to jobs, whether it's at Wegmans or whether it's at RIT or MCC, the opportunities are endless. So we need to figure out how to create those pathways and those pipelines. And that's the harder work that our fellowship will succeed at, but it may take a couple of years.
All right. How big can you get here? You said that first cohort's 10. You want to eventually have two groups of 15 per year, so maybe 30. You're going to triple in size. Is that roughly where you're going to end up being, you think, with this?
I think so. We initially talked about doing four cohorts per year, so every quarter. But I think what we've learned is that you really need to have a more hands-on approach with each cohort. So we're going to enroll one in July of this year. We're going to enroll another one in January of 2020, and then it should be every July and January moving forward.
Why don't you mention again?
I will.
How are people going to?
Foodlinkny.org. So if you heard Gloria's story today and you know someone who has any type of similar barriers to employment, whatever they may be, and you think that they're interested in the culinary arts, send them our way, foodlinkny.org. Lots of info on there, or you can email me directly at mgruber@foodlinkny.org.
And Lindsay Benage is the Training and Development Coordinator for Rochester and the Southern Tier for Wegmans. Any way to know at any one time in the Wegmans stores in our area how many jobs are open? I mean, like, I think we have this idea that there's no way you have all that many openings. But you do sometimes.
Yeah, and it honestly changes by the day. It really does. We've been holding some culinary recruitment events around town at Wegmans. We'll advertise those. So, you know, we're constantly looking for those opportunities externally. And then, you know, we have our pipeline programs, our internships and our externships that we hope give people structure and the opportunity to continue to grow.
How do you feel after a year of this program? We talked a lot to Mitch about, you know, what Foodlink is learning. What about on the Wegman side? What are the big lessons you've taken away from this?
Sure. You know, as much as we say the fellows have learned so much, Foodlink's learned so much, I really think we have as well. It's allowed us to really look at our material and the way that our extern programs are structured, and we realize we want to continue that partnership and leverage on that. And then also the experience that we're providing to these externs and fellows, the knowledge that we're giving of the growth, so they truly understand what those 12 weeks will be like, but more importantly, what are those opportunities beyond? And I think the biggest thing is just the importance of having a mentor. All of our fellows were assigned a mentor. They were a sous chef level or above in our stores, oftentimes our lead chefs. Their knowledge and passion, and really the kudos goes to them and their teams in the stores who live it every day, who are getting their job done, but also taking the time to provide good experiences for folks coming in.
So Gloria, you have a mentor.
Yes.
How'd it go?
I love him. He's really nice. He's really kind.
How has it helped you specifically?
He understands the stuff, so he's tried to be like make the stuff out around my problems or something. So if I'm gonna be late, he understand. If I have a problem that I cannot go because my baby have to be in the hospital or something, he understand. So he's really nice.
Okay. And as we mentioned, Gloria, you know, you are, you know, you're in a group of Puerto Ricans now living in Rochester after the hurricane, at, you know, hundreds.
I know.
How many people from Puerto Rico have you met in Rochester? Is it a lot?
A lot. Yes.
Generally speaking, I mean, every person, every family is different in a different situation. What are the biggest challenges that people are facing? How are most of your friends from Puerto Rico doing since moving to Rochester?
I have some friends that I met here. Mm-hmm. They don't find job because of the language. They don't understand nothing, so they don't hire them because of the language. If you know, some family come together, father, mother, and all his children, you're not going to have the whole help. And, like, maybe you don't have help because you have the whole family. Mm-hmm. And it don't matter if you try to seek jobs, you're not going to find no job because you don't know English. So mostly of the friends that I know already moved because of that.
Already moved where?
I have two friends that already moved to Massachusetts.
Oh, other states.
Yep. And I think to Buffalo, some mm-hmm. place.
Yeah.
Yep.
Away from Rochester,
yes.
Anyway. Because it wasn't working here.
Nope.
Boy, that's tough. And, yep. I mean, you know, Mitch, it's not, it's going to be a challenge for any community to absorb this. But do you have any sense for how you'd grade Rochester so far in working with families post-hurricane?
Hard to say. Yeah. I think
it's a lot of factors.
I know that the district has done a lot of work to try to be accommodating and helpful, but I think it is really hard. I do think that we have a very, very a big Puerto Rican community, and there's a lot of support networks and systems. But for a lot of folks who maybe didn't have a very full when they got here, I'm sure it's very difficult.
You want to send a message to employers about the question of not employing someone because of language?
Yeah, I think we all need to figure out how to do better and how to figure out how to employ the people who are already here. I think there's two things that oftentimes don't happen in the conversation on workforce development. We try to train people for jobs that don't exist in our community, or we try to create jobs for people that aren't necessarily here. And we need to fix that. And this program is the epitome of that. We looked at a big employer who we knew was ready to employ folks. We asked them what their needs were. We co-designed the curriculum together. And then we went out and recruited and we found people to fill those jobs. We can do this. We can do this across sectors. This is not just about the food industry. I will say one other thing, though, about the scalability of it, because you asked. This is a very expensive program to run. Very expensive. For us to have all these folks become paid employees required a lot of capital. So we need to figure out how to find funding streams for this at a state, local, and federal level as well.
Well, Gloria, in her 40-hour week job, is going to make roughly 50% more than the average entry-level food industry worker in this country. And that's a great start. Good luck to you.
Thank
I hope you.
You
and your family stay here.
Yes.
And it's been really wonderful talking to you.
Thank you.
Good luck. That's Gloria Soldevila Ramos and Mitch Gruber, Chief Strategy Officer for FoodLink. The website is
foodlinky.org. Please go there and check it out and make any nominations. And I also do want to thank the Konar Foundation for helping us continue the program as we wait for state funding.
Thank you, Mitch. Thanks for being here. And our thanks to Lindsay Bennage from Wegmans. Thanks for the knowledge and the experience this hour. Great talking to you. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Short break. More connections coming up.